Hey, Jonathan Goodman here. I have super exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, that I've been talking about forever, is almost here. This is published by HarperCollins. The president of Shopify endorsed it. The editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine endorsed it. This thing is going to blow the roofs off, and I'm asking that you please pre-order your copy today on your local Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's available. It's called The Obvious Choice. Hope you pre-order it. Hope you love it.
So how do you stay... like when you feel like you're hitting a roadblock when it comes to social media specifically, like can't seem to get followers, can't seem to like get traction there, not really much that seems like a common denominator.
Sure.
Like how do you stay just like, I guess for lack of a better way to put it, how do you like stay positive and like worry free, like not thinking about like, cause that's what it feels like. Is like, I can't get a foothold in it and I can't really, there's other things I could be doing better, but with how much better my stuff has already gotten, it's just like, sometimes it just feels like, what the hell? What isn't working?
Right. You saying that seems to be a bottleneck? Like you feel pretty good with everything else?
No, I mean, there's always plenty of stuff I can improve on, but I just like, I don't understand sometimes how I'm not expecting like massive growth because there are things I could be doing better and things I can be doing more of, but like, it's been so stagnant.
Yeah.
With things getting, it's just, it's a.
One thing like, that I've definitely noticed is that social media definitely comes in ebbs and flows. I mean, it does the same on mine. Now, I also go through phases where I care or don't care in different amounts towards it. So that contributes. I'll tell you what I do to get out of a funk with it, which is I look for inspiration from other people. Do you know, Adam, other folks who talk about the same sort of subjects as you? Doesn't have to be the exact same subject, you know, but parallel subjects as you. Call it like they market towards the same audience with the content. Who do it with the same style of content that seems to work for you. Right. Whether they market with memes, whether they do it with written stuff, whether they do it with videos. Can you think of a few people who do that and seem to be doing really well with it?
Yes. I mean, it's hard to really know exactly, but people that have bigger followings than I do. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what I'll usually do whenever I want to get out of a funk is I'll think of the people like that meet that category, right? And I'll go to their accounts and I'll do it on a desktop because I just find it easier, but I'll do it on a desktop and you know, you can kind of hover over people's posts and you can see what the engagement got. I'll look for posts of theirs that outperform the rest of their account. Because, you know, if it's a big account, they've been doing it for a long time, whatever. They're going to get good engagement on a bunch of stuff. It might not mean that there's something particularly special there. And so I'll look for the ones that outperform the rest of them. And I'll kind of take notes of it and I'll look at the hooks that they're using, maybe even create a collection of hooks that I've used. And then I'll create my own versions of it. Like, put it into your own words. It's not to say that this is what you want to do all the time, but they've clearly got some sort of a proven formula there. It could be a way to kickstart things with your audience too, because inevitably what it will do is it will get you out of your natural patterns and speak a little bit differently. Now, the next thing that you need to do is you need to go out and you need to get new fresh blood to your page. And the way to do that is by following a simple principle that I just call people who do one thing, do everything. People who don't. Like people who buy, buy. People who don't buy, don't buy. People who share, share lots. People who don't share, don't share. People who comment, comment lots. People who don't comment, don't comment. And so what often happens when somebody has built up a page is, even if they do get a bunch of followers on the page, those followers might not be the type of people who comment. They might just be more kind of passive followers. What if you want to jumpstart a page? Number one, take proven content, because you need to repeat proven content like kind of consistently, maybe not work out of your own brain that's grown a little bit stagnant, especially if your energy's a little bit low for it at the moment. So that's number one. And then number two is you go to these pages like yours, and then you go in the comments of their posts. And you look at the people who have left comments, and you go to those people's pages. And oftentimes they're going to be in similar industries as yours, right? And you go and you follow those pages. And then you interact with those pages and maybe even send them a message and say, hey, really love that post. That person will then go back and follow your page a lot of the time. And that person is the type of person who comments on posts. You see what I mean? A lot of what I did when I decided that I wanted to build back up my Instagram a couple of years ago, when I decided I wanted to pay attention to it, was I was like, okay, well, I want to build from a really strong foundation. And I want my page to be a flurry of activity. And so most of what I did was behind the scenes. And I mean, this is where it's really, really difficult to kind of watch what other people do, because you only see what's above water. You only see the tip of the iceberg. Behind the scenes, what I did was exactly what I'm describing, because I actually only really wanted people following me as I was building up my page that were the types of people who shared and commented on stuff. At least for the beginning. Because what that meant is that everything that I put out turned into a bit of a conversation. Now there's kind of a party here. Now there's more of a community. And then I just spent a lot of time kind of engaging and pushing that forward. And, you know, I'd even like give people nicknames that commented often. And I work back on that nickname with them. And it'd kind of be playful that way. It's less about this. This is the biggest misconception, I think, with social media. Your content actually does not have, like, the quality of your content actually does not have that much to do with your success. It's more about your earned reputation. And then it's about the community that you're able to foster, that you actually have to go out and find. Now, once you become notable, or once there becomes engagement on your page, it becomes much easier. Once a lot's going on, people see that there's a lot going on. And I'm doing this now, like I'm building up on Twitter, where I have not historically done a lot. And it's too largely a new community. Like, there's just not a big fitness community on Twitter. So it's largely to like the biz op community and whatever, right? And I'm doing it for my books, but it's interesting because most of them have no idea who the hell I am. And a lot of them aren't on Instagram. Like, they don't see. So I'm having to basically do the exact same thing, but starting up from scratch. And, but it's the exact same process. I'll go to pages that I think have good content. I'll look at the people engaging with those pages, commenting, sharing it, because you can view post engagements. And I'll go and engage with those people and build relationships with them. I'm actually not interested in the person posting. I'm not interested in the popular accounts. I'm interested in the people who are interacting with the popular accounts, because I want them over on my page. How does that sound?
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. That's helpful. Definitely.
Cool. Yeah, that's the road builders. I mean, that's the stuff that you don't see, right? A lot of people will give the advice of like, go to a popular account and, I mean, basically in not so many words, copy what they do, which is, you know, I don't think particularly bad advice. Like, there's not that many things that you could be saying and not many ways that you could be saying it, really. Sveto, what's this about you signed a client with from a collaboration?
Yeah, that's something that I noticed. So in the curriculum of OTM, one of the last thing that I kind of was introduced a little bit more or got my attention is collaboration. So I did a collaboration with my cousin who was a IFBB pro overseas. I got about 3,000 new profiles on my page, a lot of DMs, and then I did another collaboration with a girl that has PhD in kinesiology as well. I got a lot of leads from that. And yesterday I signed a client from that collaboration within few messages and DM, I
Got
got him on the call and last night. So, and I look at the numbers, like it's really good way to get in front of the audience. And yeah, it's simple as I guess looking at your network. I guess for Adam would be to look at someone that can add some kind of value to start a conversation or something, and people will come there right away. That's the conversation in a quiet place, I find.
Yeah, there's kind of two ways to tackle it, right? One is to try to make your own account a flurry of activity. Another is to try to figure out where there is already flurries of activities that you can basically capture some of that. Collaborations with other content creators, sure. But there was somebody, he's an alumni of OTM, Jeff. I talk about him in my book. I give this example in the book, and he tried to create this was on Instagram. So he tried to create an Instagram account, and it was the same. It was just, he was not able to generate a lot of traction. And he was like a young man talking about how to train mothers, So it's going to be hard to generate traction there. He's obviously not his avatar. And so we kind of switched things up with him a little bit. He had a Facebook group for fit parents, and that was his conversion metric. And I knew somebody at the time. I was like, let's do this as a test. So I knew somebody at the time who ran a business. It was called Healing Mama Co. Basically, like pre and postpartum bags. Like that's what she did. That's what she sold. And so she was a mompreneur. And she also happened, her name was Rowena, and she's one of our closest friends, actually. But she also just so happened to be very, very good at social media. Now, her business has actually since gone under, which is further testament to being good at social media is not necessarily the way to build a business. But she was able to gather a whole bunch of mothers who already spend money on premium health products. Well, people who buy lots. People who buy premium health products that are mothers buy lots of premium health products. They are the type of person who would also buy premium coaching. And so Jeff, what we basically said to him is like, don't even worry about generating leads from your Instagram page. Like, let's just try this instead. Turn your Instagram page into effectively a sales page. Like, it's there for nurturance, it's there for answering questions, it's there to showcase who you are and the people that you serve. But you're not looking at engagement on this page. It doesn't matter. You're not worried about posting every day to gather an audience, right? It's really a sales pitch. It's so when you generate anybody from anywhere else and they come over here, there's something for them to see. Call it like a business card. And then there's, of course, the lead generators like pinned to the top and invitations to DM you and stuff like that. And then he has a Facebook group. Instead, why don't you buy one of Rowena's bags? It was like 300 something. I think it was $338. So buy one of her bags, like contact her first, but like offer to do a giveaway alongside her. And so they did that. So he bought one of her bags. I think it was $338. And they did a giveaway together where Rowena had this page of like 22,000 followers that are all Jeff's perfect type of clients. And you could win the bag, a $338. And in order to enter, what you needed to do was you needed to be following Arena, you needed to follow Jeff's page, and you need to join Jeff's free Facebook group for fit parents, which is where the winner was going to be announced. Jeff's program was, I think his price point was about $1,500. I can't remember. I did the calculation. It's in the book. But it was something like Jeff could run this promotion seven times and get one client and break even. And he's not creating content. All that he's doing is he's and so how many are there other people, like how many mompreneurs, solo mompreneurs are there that have companies like this that spend way more time than they should on social media that don't that sell to the same audience as you, but don't sell the same thing as you. That would be ecstatic for you to buy one of their things and do a giveaway, for example. So that's another option as well. Anything else on that topic, guys, before we move on to another one? Guys and gal, this is like exactly the fitness industry right here. Call it a post office, too much mail. Okay. Next topic. Who's up?
Hey John, how are you?
Hey, what's up, Elena? The gal.
It's me.
I have a super exciting announcement. My next book, called The Obvious Choice, is finally available for pre-order. This is my first traditionally published book, and it is by far the best thing that I've ever written. But you don't even need to listen to me. Harley Finkelstein, the literal president of Shopify, said to consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. He says, Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. There's tons of other endorsements. I won't bore you with them, but I really, really want to encourage you to pre-order the book today and not wait until it comes out to order it. And the reason for that is quite simple. When you pre-order a book on Amazon, you actually lock in the lowest ever price that it'll be. No joke, I pre-ordered a book, a different book, for about $40 not too long ago. And when the book arrived, I got refunded by Amazon for $10. Why? Because what happens is that there was one day over that entire 3-month period between when I pre-ordered it and when the book came out that the book was discounted. But because I had the book pre-ordered, I locked in the lowest ever price that Amazon will ever offer the book up until that launch. And Amazon often discounts books. So this way you don't have to watch. Lock in your pre-order today. Thank you so much. Hope that you love it. And back to the pod.
Oh no,
I'm here.
There's one. Oh no, Valerie's here too. There's a few.
So I think I asked this the other day post that you made. Mom of three here, got a 3-month-old at home, running my business solo. I'm tapped out and I'm constantly feeling like I can only get like one thing done a day. And while that's fine and dandy, an extra set of hands would be fantastic. Now, I don't necessarily have a ton of revenue right now coming in, but I feel like a hire could give me some breathing room. And I don't know what that hire could be, or maybe you have recommendations.
Got it. Yeah, I had notes here based off of your question because I was going to cover it. So let's do it. I like this question because my approach is a little bit different than what you'll often see. I mean, I don't know who you should hire, but I do have a process that you can follow to help figure it out. Yeah, I don't know who you should hire, but I do have a process to help you figure it out. You want to hire for skills. You want to hire for specific things. Instead of saying, you know, I need a person, you say, I need help with X. I need help with Y. And so the process is this. This is actually something my dad taught me. You take a piece of paper, you know, when you have a spare couple seconds, if you ever have a spare couple seconds, and you're going to write out like basically a business tree, like an org chart. Which is funny if you're a solo business person, but you're going to write out an org chart. So every fitness business like ours has kind of three main branches, right? Call it customer service administration. Branch number two is sales and marketing. Branch number three is client care. You know, under that comes coaching, comes programming, all that kind of stuff. So on this org chart, you have yourself as the boss up the top. Then you have the three branches. Under each branch, you're going to create as many branches as there needs to be. And so every single task that somebody needs to do, every single job that somebody needs to do is a branch, like it would be in an org chart. Answering email, responding to client inquiries, creating the content, the DM conversations, the sales calls, building the programs, doing the coaching calls, right? However many you think is reasonable, there's no limit really. Obviously, don't get too nitty gritty, but like however many you think is reasonable. And then in every single one of those boxes, you're going to put a name. And it's going to be your name in every single one of those boxes. the process of systematizing and operationalizing a business is to systematically replace those names. It might start slow at first. You might be able to find one person who replaces multiple names. But over time, if you decide you still want to work in the business in some capacity, then you keep your name in the boxes that you want to be in. Even like OTM, my name is not in any of these boxes. Right? And so over time, that's how you kind of have to do it. Now, the next question is, okay, well, what order do I go in? And there's a couple filters that you want to work through here. So the first is, what do I hate about this thing? Right? What do I feel like I really need to do that has to get done, that's actually important to get done, that I just drag my feet doing? You know, some weeks I'm able to motivate myself to do it kind of, but not that good of a job. Most of the time it doesn't get done, and then I feel guilty for not doing it. There's always going to be a few of those. Those are probably going to be first. The first step is to, you know, figure out whether that actually is something that needs to be done. The second is to find somebody whose brain works opposite than yours and actually likes that type of thing. The second are just like, okay, well, probably sales, marketing, you know, like the high revenue levers. There's just a lot more problems that you can solve when you have excess money and very few problems that you can't solve when you don't. And so it's just going to kind of always come pretty early on in the process. Is hiring for those types of roles. Or freeing yourself up so that you can do a much better job and spend more time in those types of roles, if those are the types of roles that really self-select for you. And so you go through that matrix and it should become pretty clear. Okay, I need somebody for this. I need somebody for this. I need somebody for this right now. And then you think through and you kind of work backwards, where is the skill already being demonstrated in my life? It doesn't have to be in a fitness specific role. The biggest mistake people who run online fitness businesses make when they hire is they think that they need to hire somebody who knows anything about online fitness businesses. Drea, who is the coaching lead for this mentorship, she's phenomenal. Her background is in retail at clothing stores. You want somebody who's a great coach and great customer service, who understands selling, who understands rejection, who understands all of that. That's where that skill is demonstrated at a high level. Obviously, if you want somebody to build your programming, you need somebody who's good at programming, but that person does not need to be good at the sales aspect or the entrepreneur aspect of fitness. They need to be good at the programming aspect. And so then it becomes very, very easy to hire somebody very, very part-time. And you know exactly what skill set you're hiring for. And you hire them for that skill set. And you plug them in that box. And that frees up your time and hopefully some mental capacity to focus on the highest growth leaders that you can in the business. Can you talk? I saw your baby had some kids in the car, so you might not.
Yeah, I can talk. I mean, okay. I might hear one of them, but it's fine. That makes sense for sure. The org tree will be an interesting task. I can see myself drawing blanks as to what may even go in those spaces, but I can definitely play around with it.
Well, think about a client that you're working with. What's everything that you do with them? Like,
right.
You got to onboard them. You've got to build their program. You've got to deliver their program to them somehow. There's going to be some, call it client support. If they email, where are they emailing? If they message, where are they messaging? Somebody's got to be at least monitoring that and answering that. And then, of course, there's sales. And then how did you acquire them? I would just
How
run
did
through. Yeah, I would just
I acquire
run
them,
through one
you said?
time. Yeah, how did you acquire them in the first place, right? Like, did they come through some sort of media that you created? Were they referral? If it was media, then of course there's everything that has to do with the media. There's the content or the network or the collaboration that attracted them. There's the conversation. If they came through a referral, they would have been introduced to you somehow. Where was that? And then probably a phone call. I mean, that's it, I think, for most of you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you don't need to get too
Yeah,
granular.
I mean, that definitely makes sense. I think for me, I at the moment, it's like I've heard you say it before, and for some reason my brain keeps diverting back to like I get sucked in to the social media like content game, and it screws with my head. I really would love some, just like occasionally, maybe like some distance from it, so I'm not like
Yeah.
constantly in it, if that makes sense. Working on whatever mindset barrier that is, but I feel like just that, like, you saying like having somebody that is different from me could be very helpful, I think.
Having somebody who thinks different for sure. It's, I think people underestimate just how much you can reuse existing content. You will notice it and you might even cringe at it. I have not created a single new piece of social media content on Instagram in over 3 months. Not one. For anybody who follows me on Instagram, for anybody who follows, have you noticed? Maybe.
Funny you say that, because I was doing exactly what you were telling Adam to do the other day, and I was like, you know what, let me just see like how he structures his stuff, and I was like, I'll be damned, there it is, it's like
Right.
it's on repeat, like with a couple of weeks or whatever in between, but it's on repeat.
Yeah, and I mean, look, is that ideal? No, the answer is no, it's not ideal. But does it work more than good enough for everything, every reason that I need it to work? Absolutely. And does it mean that my life isn't owned and run and operated by a social media company? The answer is yes. And so you can even take it and work the same pieces of content into threads too, right? Like if you have single pieces of content, I mean, with written stuff, it's easier. But even videos, I mean, I don't do a lot with video. I'm starting to now, but I'm not touching it. But what people do with videos, a lot of the top ones, is they build out their video content in an almost modular fashion, where, the same piece of content, something you talk about, for example, on leadership, could be also perhaps something that hits on the topic of transparency, or responsibility, or whatever. Like it could hit under a lot of different buckets usually. And so what will happen is somebody will create, a piece of content that's like a module, and then they'll use it in a whole bunch of bigger pieces over time. So every piece of content that they create, they almost like put it in a bank and like tag it in a sense. Now, that's a bigger machine than I personally have the capacity to build. But the only reason that I say this to you is, to a lesser extent, I do that with written stuff. A post that performs well that I create, like a short individual post, one of the ways that I reuse it is I include it then in a thread. And I'll work it in different threads in different ways. But yeah, I mean, nobody notices unless they're like looking for it and studying it. And then they look at it and they say, oh, I'll be damned. And then they move on with their day. I don't think it costs me any business. Maybe it does. I don't know. Shane, what's your question? How often?
Yeah, like as you said, you haven't made obviously content for a few months. And I didn't really think about reposting content for a while, and I've spent way too much time on creating content over the last year, but that was intentional because I wanted to get better at storytelling and actually
Sure.
at the skill of doing it. But I'm at
Sure.
that point. I'm good with where I'm at. It still needs work, obviously. But so in relation to reusing content, like do you have a general sort of minimum as to how long you're leaving in between reposting the same content? I mean, I'm sure there's not an exact answer. It doesn't really matter one way or the other, but
I mean, it's so hilarious. Let me show you this. Just at how hacked together my system is. Can you guys see my window here?
yeah.
This is my notes file on my phone. I think notes, like Apple Notes, is the single greatest productivity tool ever invented. Like, you can see mine here. Like, this is how I organize my life, on the left. But usually on a Sunday, what I'll do is I will literally just sit down for 20 minutes and I'll swipe through my phone on my Instagram feed and I'll just see kind of what I'm feeling. And then I'll just copy that post, link here. And then, I mean, now I'm not doing it. Now my team's doing it because I don't even want to log in anymore. But what I did for like a few years is, I just open these back up and I'd screenshot the post and then I'd recrop it and I'd copy the caption, or sometimes I'd make a new caption if I felt like making a new caption. If it had a date in it, maybe I'd like change the date, and then I'd repost it. It was like that's my entire system is that. I'm going to initially scroll about 3 weeks, give or take. But I have definitely made the mistake of like posting something before that was posted the week before. Nobody said anything. I think if I did it all the time, somebody would. But nobody said anything. I think it's already so hard. And I think we have to figure out ways to make it less hard, to make it work for us in a way that serves us instead of beats us down. And sometimes what you said, I think, is brilliant, Shane. Like, sometimes you're like, I want to work and build the storytelling muscle. This is my time to do it. Right. And if you're feeling the fire to do that, hell yeah, man. That's what you're doing right now, which is great. But realize that what you're also doing is you're creating assets that then can work for you for a very long period of time.
The only problem is every few as I've been going through this process of getting better at effectively storytelling, which is what the
Sure.
posts are. Nothing's ever good enough anymore. Like that one I did 3 weeks ago. I somehow have to wrestle with that in here. But
But
that's, I mean, that's life and being a human, right? Yeah.
that's your own brain. That's not actually true. And I mean, even if it is, right? Like, that's just a part of growth. I mean, I think about this book I've got coming out within in a month and a half, and it's so much better than anything I've ever produced in the past, to the point where it makes me embarrassed by everything I've ever produced in the past. I'm just a different human as a result of how difficult it was and how much it challenged me and the team that I was surrounded with to produce this thing, where my standards are just at a different level than what they used to be. I have a hard time looking at my other books. And yet, I still get tagged every single day by people posting my book saying, "Hey man, I'm reading this right now and I'm loving it." So it does not meet my standards anymore. That does not mean that it's not useful for other people. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
Yeah, Ignite the Fire was the first book I ever read on personal training, just so you know.
Whoa, I wrote that when I was 24 years old.
Yeah.
I'm 39.
Far out. You would cringe so much reading it yourself, wouldn't you?
I can't even look at that book. I
Yeah.
can't even look at it. It's just not who I am anymore. But that's fine. That's fine. People still find it beneficial, and I'm grateful for that. So, you know, and some of the stories in that book and some of the lessons from that book, I have taken and reworked. And so, you know, maybe next time you go through a period where you really want to focus on creating content, you go through your feed, you do a quick back of the napkin assessment of what outperformed other stuff, you know, like what seemed to kind of hit, like what resonated with people, and also just like what felt good to you. You write down those notes and you basically refilm them. You know, refilm them, rewrite them. I don't know about you. I don't have that many good ideas. Like, it's just basically saying the same. I mean, being a fitness professional on the internet is saying the same eight things over and over again for your entire career.
I don't have eight.
I mean, I maybe have three.
Yeah.
Same thing with clients, right? It's just not that much. And so, I think it's cool to have periods where you're creating. I think it's call it like in psychology, there's a phenomenon called the explore-exploit phenomenon. There's times when you should explore, forge new ground, try out a new restaurant, right? And then there are other times when it's better to exploit. I'm already comfortable here. I know I already like the hamburger at this restaurant. I'm going to just go back to that same place. I think we look at this the same way. Zach, what are you thinking, man? Beautiful backdrop.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just outside in San Francisco, you know, near the bridge.
Yes.
No, I'm looking at you. I know you're in Mexico. You're traveling, but
yeah, that's right.
I assume Frida Kahlo and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was not on this topic, but since you have a bed in the background, just this is my background. I wonder, well, it's my bed. And I'm like, is it better to have a fake background, like on a sales call, or is a bed okay? That's something I was thinking. Sorry, not to change the subject.
Let's see the bed. Turn off your background.
God, here we go. Video settings. I don't know.
I think the answer is it probably doesn't matter. You know, it's kind of become it's like back in the day, you know, this is obviously before Allison and I started dating, but like
that's it.
Right. I mean, you know, back in the day before Allison and I started dating, if you met a girl on the internet, you didn't tell anybody that you met her on the internet. Like, you didn't tell people that you met on a dating site. Now it's like weird to tell people that you didn't meet on a dating site. I think it's kind of the same. Working from home has become so normalized that people expect it. I mean, it would almost be more odd if you had like a corporate background behind you. So,
right.
As long as your bed is like made and not disgusting, I would almost, I mean, I don't know what you have. I don't know what those photos and stuff are, but I would almost
have like image, like I don't abstract geometric.
Yeah. So, I mean, that doesn't do anything for you, but what I like to do is I like to seed certain conversation topics and connection points in my backgrounds. I obviously don't have it here because this is a super temporary background, but I like to seed certain connection and conversation points in my background.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm sitting at my desk at home, I have a monkey lamp. I have a stick. I have a very special clock with a very special saying. I have a Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck 1989 rookie card. I have a Calvin and Hobbes comic. All of those things are behind me, at my desk. And all of those are points of connection. You know, it's not to me, it's not like a professional or unprofessional thing. It's more people want to connect with humans. The faster and more seamless you can make that happen, either by what you say or by what's around you, that's obviously important to you because it's in your home. People know you're working from home. I think the better. And so whether you actually have a conversation about it or not is a different question. Like whether somebody's going to have a conversation with me about Calvin and Hobbes or whatever. I might bring it up. I might not. But oftentimes I'll be, you know, I'm doing so many podcasts now. Like this is recording number four of the day for me. And I'm just doing a lot of podcasts now in you know, promotion of the upcoming book. And I don't know some of the podcast hosts, like the PR team has set it up or whatever it is. And the first thing they do, and they jump on the call sometimes, like, yo, sweet, sweet baseball card. Like immediately now there's a connection. So I don't care that there's a bed behind you. I don't think that that matters. What I would do though, if I were you, is actually use your background to try to create some sort of connection points that you can thread that are important to you, that perhaps have a very quick story that you can tell about it, that will show that you're like a real human and like a good person and a loving person and a caring person, and a genuine person, and have those behind you.
Maybe have my dog on the bed.
Sure, or like a picture of your
Trying
dog
to think
behind
of,
you if you can't, you know, like geometric shapes, as you know, you can love them cool, but like they ain't gonna do anything for you, in your background. It's like it's like going to the dentist office and you have, you know, the wall art of the flower pot or whatever. Or like
So bad.
my dentist has this one YouTube video that's about 7 minutes long that repeats of birds. And I'm like, you must have given this video like a million watches at this point because they just have it on repeat. The last three dentist appointments I've had, they've had the same. So that's at least a year and a half. The same one video on repeat for 7 minutes. I'm like, you could be doing so much more with this space.
One other quick thing about this, the visuals and stuff. So when I have my calls, I usually will do this where it's not going to let me shrink this right now. Okay, where I move you to the top, so I'm looking in your eyes, right? But I noticed
Sure.
that your camera is, I mean, you're lower, so you're not really look. Do not look like you're. Do people need to feel like they're being looked at in the eyes on camera like you would in
On
person?
sales
Does
calls,
that
it
matter?
probably helps. I mean, my true answer is I don't know. My other almost embarrassing answer is the reason why I look low is because my setup is so janky that like this is my setup right now. I mean, it's like that's what my phone is leaning on, that's acting as my camera. And so the reason that I'm looking low is because you're on my computer and my phone is above you, and I have yet to buy a tripod that actually brings my phone down a little bit lower to use that as the camera. It's not ideal at all, but that's why my setup is this way. It's not by design. Is it better to look people in the eye? I mean, yeah, probably. Probably it's better to look people in the eye. Does it really make a huge difference? You'd have a hard time convincing me. If all else is equal, yeah, it's probably beneficial. Is it something you should worry about or think about? Me. There's a story that I like, about Bezos. And basically what happened was he went to Y Combinator, you know, this big startup incubator, and he was trying to sell them, this is many years ago, on Amazon Web Services on AWS. And so Amazon Web Services is like a database, basically a hosting company, right? And it's actually like a large part of Amazon's profit. but this is one who was starting up and he was trying to sell them on it, all these startup companies. And he told them a story and he said, I was touring a couple of weeks ago, I was touring all these 100-plus-year-old Belgian beer makers in Belgium. And they told me that there was a period where electricity was invented. And so they were making beer and then electricity was invented, right? And so they had a choice whether to continue making beer the same way that they were making it manually or to use electricity to make their process more efficient. But the catch was that there was no electrical grid that they could tap into. And so in order for these Belgian beer makers to continue to make beer using electricity, they had to become experts at electricity formation. They had to basically learn how to make their own electricity. And so in the short term, what happened was that these beer makers that actually used electricity, even though they became more efficient and it was the smarter business thing to do, all went under because they missed the most important point. Being able to use electricity didn't make your beer taste better. It was a distraction. And very, very quickly, the electrical grid was created and all the other ones caught up anyway. And so I liken that to a lot of these types of questions of like, what phone should I use? What microphone should I use? How do I edit my videos better? How do I whatever? It's like, is that going to make your beer taste better? You know? I just don't, out of all of the things that we could be worrying about, and I think about these things too. I bought like $6,000 worth of video equipment, man. I never figured out how to use it. I sold it for half the price like 4 months later. It was stupid. But like, I do the same thing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Cool.
If all else is equal, do it. If not, don't stress about it. That's my answer.
Got it.
But get a picture of your dog behind you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like honestly, like a picture of your dog behind you and one or two items that represent hobbies is going to do way more for you on sales calls than you being able to have your camera at perfect eye to eye.
Okay.
Say that.
Cool. I'll redecorate. Thank you.
Redecorate for sales calls.
Yeah, exactly.
Cal, you asked this question in the Facebook group too. You said, what would you tell your younger self? My question to you back is, how young am I when I'm telling myself this younger self? What era am I in?
Straight out of college.
Oh shit. Okay. Straight out of college. What I would say is, and I did this to some extent unknowingly now, but I would have taken much greater advantage over it, which is, recognized the tremendous false economies that exist when you're young, where you're made to believe that you should optimize perhaps for money or even recognition, when really what you should be optimizing for is self-development and connection to people who are farther ahead from you. Personal training is a very, very rare career that way, where I don't know any other career where you could be some dumb shit 22-year-old who doesn't know anything and have the most successful people in your neighborhood paying money every single month to spend time with you. What I would tell my younger self now is take way more advantage, ask way more questions, take your clients out for deli sandwiches after their workouts way more often. I did that a little bit. I did not do that as much as I should have, and put myself in the right rooms. And I didn't do this until much later in my entrepreneurial journey, probably 27, 28, not straight out of college, but put myself in rooms, you know, even as like volunteers and like business communities and stuff like that. Like if there's an event that you want to attend, like see if you can volunteer at it, for example. Trying to and going in there and not trying to impress people with what you've done, instead telling other people how impressive they are to you and being very complimentary of them, even if you've done great things. I was way too ego driven when I was young. even when I found myself in those types of rooms when I was 26, 27, 28, when I built some stuff that was like kind of cool. And I joined some communities of high-end business owners, interdisciplinary and fitness. I thought that the way to ingratiate myself to others was to impress them with all of my achievements. And of course, what happens then is they nod and they go, "Ah, that's so cool, man. Good for you. I just got to go to the bathroom. I'll hit you up later." And that was it. That was it. Those are a couple of my regrets in those times.
Awesome. Thank you.
You got it, man. We can hit one or two more questions if you have it. It's been a
Okay,
fun
so
all
I have
over the
another question.
place. Sure.
All right. So I am on the struggle bus when it comes to getting into my DMs and having conversations with people. I just, if like they are not engaging in some way, I'm like,
Yeah.
I just don't go for it at all. And my coach is like, I gotta get over it, but I'm like having a hard time getting over it. Do you
Okay.
have suggestions in that arena?
Your coach is right. You have to get over it. If you're unwilling to get over it, or if it's a serious block, then that's going to be at the top of your list of things that you're going to need to find somebody else to do on your behalf. That is, I mean, conversations with leads that are not even leads yet, consultative conversations that way. That's the top of your funnel. The bigger you make that, the better. That's not something that can be ignored. It's not something that you have to be the one doing, however. And so some people love those conversations. They light them up. Other people really, really struggle with it. I'm like you, I would never be able to do it myself. So I feel you on that. But it's very, very important.
Right. So, I don't know, that's definitely a mindset thing that I'm struggling with. I guess
What's
that would
the
be
block?
potentially, I just, like first off, like when I was trying more often, I was getting met with a lot of just left on read, like nobody was actually responding.
Yep.
And I guess over time, it just kind of created this thought in my head that I was either bothering people or they had a feeling like I was trying to sell them eventually.
I mean,
And
which you are.
even if my conversations weren't
Right.
re I mean, I am obviously hoping for that to occur, but to the like my questioning or my comments weren't even going in that direction to start with. So I
So
guess,
the so I mean, number one, you are like I don't think you should hide from that fact. You are in business. The reason why you are on social media is to generate business. If you did not have to generate business, would you be on social media? Probably not. Maybe to like your friends and family. Certainly not how you're doing it right now. You have to look at it like it's a business that you're in. If you're in a sandwich shop, and you can tell it's around lunchtime, if you're in a sandwich shop, and somebody walks into the sandwich shop and they say, "I might be hungry. I'm not quite sure what you got." Like, your goal is to sell them a sandwich. And so I think number one, you have to approach it that way. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't be respectful. It doesn't mean that you can't build positive relationships with these people and genuinely care about them. And you might say to some of these people, "I think you're wonderful. I don't think I'm the right person to help you." God, we say that to a lot of people every single day. But it doesn't mean that your goal is not to sell to them before you figure out that they're not the right people to sell to. And in terms of like getting left on read, I mean, hell yeah, that's sales. That's sales. 3 to 5% of people that exist in this world that you speak to are going to be ready and potentially willing to sign up for the type of service that you offer. another give or take 5% are potentially open to it, but they're not quite thinking about it. The remaining 90%, it's not even crossing their mind at this time. What does that mean? 100 conversations to have maybe 10 calls, probably less. You should see my DMs. I mean, we'll put out a call to action for, you know, a free guide or something like that. We'll have 500 responses. We'll send the guide to every single one of them. 200 will click the link to download the guide. Maybe 50 will reply back. Maybe 20 calls will be booked. Maybe 15. It's just a pure numbers game. You know, and the better you get with targeting, obviously the higher percentage that you're going to get, but you're going to be left on red a lot. And that does not mean that you should not follow up as well. You should follow up respectfully. You should follow up with additional reasons. Hey, I was just thinking about you. You know, I know that you initially wanted this guide on mobility. You know, a lot of the women that I work with also have trouble fitting in protein in their breakfast. I just put together just like three quick ways that I did it with three kids. You know, it kind of adds on to the breakfast that I'm making the kids. Hey, you interested? I can send you a quick PDF with that. You follow up to the same person a week after they left you on red, and you make that offer to them.
That makes sense.
And they might respond, they might not, right? But I mean, occasionally they'll say, please don't message me again, and so you don't. That's it. You know, like, what do you think if you walk into a store or if you inquire, you know, as to somebody's thing, and you're not quite that serious about the service, but they try to sell you, you're like, oh, they're in business. I'm not interested, but I respect that they're in business.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, guys. Thanks for hanging out. This is fun. I'll get this up in the portal if you want to review anything and check it out, obviously. See you later.